Blog Talk Radio.
After 125 years, you go up to heaven, you climb all those stairs. They won't ask you where you wise like Solomon. They won't ask you where you strong like Samson. They'll ask just one question and you give just one answer. It's the end of the game and only one thing matters. They'll say, did you give it all you got? Cause in this life you only have what you got. So give it, give it, give it all you got. We only have what we got. So give it, give it, give it all you got. If you say it's easy, I'll say it's not.
You gotta give it, give it, give it, give it all you got.
And if you say it's not for you, I'll say it's your life.
You gotta give it, give it, give it, give it all you got.
And if you say you're tired, I'll say tick-tock.
You gotta give it, give it, give it, give it all you got.
And you can put my album on a shelf to ride ya.
Give it, give it, give it, give it all you got.
Wiping those tears, you look in the mirror, you face all your fears. Don't be a fool trying to
be
like the sun, and only the weak try to be strong like Samson. Oh no,
oh no,
oh no. I did what I said, I got no one to blame. Only one thing matters at the end of the game, they'll say, did you give it all you got? Cause in life you only have what you got. So give it. If you say it's easy, I'll say it's not.
You gotta give it, give it, give it all
you got. And if you say it's not for you, I'll say it's your life.
You gotta give it, give it, give it, give it all you got.
And if you say you're tired, I'll say tick tock.
You gotta give it, give it, give it, give it all you got.
No need to put my album on the shelf to rock.
Give it, give it, give it, give it all you got.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we're blessed to stay alive in the most existential, rather mundane yet paradoxically eternal moment. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert and even forcefully project out that we are the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class number 677, Conversations from the Tree of Life, Part 7. Blessed is our eternal creator, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. The creator self, we're now broadcasting live, 10:33 a.m. from the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica, corresponding to 11:33 live from Turtle Island, equals USA, equals AKA, Unified Soul Actualization. We plan to be in discussion today with co-host Sila Mita, prolific lecturer, Jerome Sage Butler, with his spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm, coined under the Tree of Life. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings of divine source, correlating, relating, and developing a dialogue with other human souls intended to give human dialogue towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature we as human beings are well advised to explore. Program content will focus on discussing various perspectives, relating to mental health. In the second half of the hour, if you want to chime in, the call number will be 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the eternal creator bless and protect you and your loved ones in peaceful and pleasant manner. I just want to mention before we bring on Jerome Sage that it is said that absence makes the heart fonder. And I'm very fond of the fact that despite our prolonged absence being together on the radio, in Blog Talk Radio, Soul Class, it's a double pleasure to welcome you in the new year, Jerome Sage.
Blessings, Brother Dan, and to all members of the Tri-State Era, Turtle Island, New York. From the heart, the diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica, you know, actually we are in Clarendon, you know, the inner parts, you know, heading on a family, you know, get together, you know, my uncle's birthday. And I just want to send salutations for 2018. Sweet it is when we gather again, because it's been a break. And it's wonderful that we can gather once again to share the word of healing, health, and well-being And it's just blessings to all the Caribbean and to all across the nations who tune into Blog Talk Radio. And a special hello to Shauna, Pookie, listening for the first time. And to all my friends listening in Greensboro, North Carolina, you don't know, hopeful and blessed. Right here, so also Cindy and Kyle in Ocherios, enough love.
And may your uncle be blessed for the coming year to have the health of stout health to share with family and friends and associates and the greater community. And it shall all transpire in a peaceful and pleasant way. Drumsedge, I'd like to talk about first why I got involved in the social service mental health movement. It's now I'm in my 20th year. And it was based on two written responses by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, direct descendant of King David Solomon, writing to the head of mental health services here in Brooklyn, New York at Coney Island Hospital. And the Rebbe wrote about the idea that when facilitating treatment for individuals who are exhibiting what we call the features, meaning those things which are identifiable and the human resources department billable, codifying, of say mental illness or some sort of form of dysfunctionality or delayed cognitive development, that the Rebbe emphasized there must be, as well as the, first of all, he said we must have the faith that every one of the individuals we treat will have a healing. But in the meantime, while we look forward to that prophetic, pronouncement of all flesh will be healed, there is the day-to-day, roll up the sleeves and get down to work and help another human being actualize their potential, but also to integrate within their cultural ancestry. And there was a story by a psychologist, he passed on a couple of years ago, his name was Dr. Reuven Feuerstein. He lived in the Holy Land of Israel. And he was once commissioned by the American government to do a, so to speak, psychological, anthropological study of Native Americans on the West, like in New Mexico. Why was there such a high rate of suicide and addiction? And one of the conclusions of his report was, and by the way, he went to the Rebbe and the Rebbe said, go ahead and do it, because he didn't understand why the American government wanted him, but he was just, I guess, he was the choice of the lot. And he went and went through it. One of the conclusions that came out of it is that in the place of cultural identity, these individuals were reaching for addictions and maladaptive behaviors. Yeah. So therefore, he had suggested, as well, cultural integration of whatever background that person is part of the therapeutic healing process. I'd like you to comment on that. And just to mention that I once heard a song by Bob Marley, Keep Your Culture. He wasn't just speaking as a Rasta visionary. He was speaking almost like a vocalizing social worker, psychologist saying it's part of staying healthy. Your comments on these matters.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, Brother Dan, for your preamble. It is beautiful, when one can sort through our complexes, through culture, to understand what is the premise of true human sanity. There is a report that I read maybe a few years ago, right, about the American Psychiatric Association. I think it was just after the war, probably in maybe 1954, right, where they were caught in an apartment in New York, where a man was reportedly acting incoherent and unresponsive. And they brought the psych department down and they committed that man. Understand? Mm-hmm. Only upon recognizing 3 weeks later, after someone who happened to recognize the great misconduct that had happened to that individual, recognizing that he was not mentally ill, Brother Dan, he was Hungarian, and they did not speak Hungarian. And instead of trying to understand that this man was speaking another language, they committed him for having a mental illness because they did not understand the language in which he spoke. That is the deepest premise to how culture engenders sanity. Because if you take someone out of the environment in which they've been socialized to come to understand themselves, in some individuals, it will lead to a disintegration in the moral fabric and the sense of consciousness, of the sense of belonging. We lose that. We lose sanity. We head towards drug addiction, drug abuse, things to substitute for that which only your culture the spirit of your ancestry, the social environment, the ways in which you are grown. These things help to engender a whole, well-adjusted, morally actualized person. And Bob Marley did have a point when he said, keep your culture. Don't be afraid of the vultures. You understand me?
Uh-huh.
Because the essence is that subjugation by more powerful human beings can tend to manipulate and deeply afflict the human psyche. So just being subjugated in such a deeply depressing manner has to have some deep repercussions. People lose it, you know, it's just natural. And the issue is that towards healing, we've got to take our efforts. You as a psychologist are using the gift of your knowledge to help the mentally disturbed, those who have dysfunction. Likewise, myself as well too, not in the clinical sense, but in the spiritual sense, understanding what it takes to really balance the human perception, the activities, and the ever-increasing human social environment, because it's constantly growing. And adaptability is some functions that we must really add to the new consciousness. Adaptability has to be great within us. Now, we have to learn to adapt and to see others as we see ourselves. It's absolute now, because the earth is getting closer, cultures are getting closer, so misunderstandings have to become less, else we're going to splinter into more conflicts again. And we have more healthy people being committed because they have lost one sense of their well-being, triggered by the environment, maybe the social environment, maybe the political, maybe even the cultural, or a combination of all. We need great examination, new clinical psychologists, new views in psychiatry, not just biochemical psychiatry, but into some engendering of change in the dysfunction of our behaviors. That is absolutely necessary now, because my personal view on mental health and where my issues are concerned is that in Jamaica, there was, I think, our leading psychiatrist made a report recently that suggested that in the next 10 years, I think he's suggesting that maybe another 15% to 20% of Jamaicans will suffer, exhibit signs of mental health. Lots of people are concerned about such a statement. Is it an auto suggestion? Is it some kind of a programming? Or is it really a wake-up call, a clear and present attempt for us to look at the deeply embedded behaviors that we've had and how it had led to a lot of violent outbursts and violent behaviors amongst our people, and it's not being properly diagnosed as mental illness, because such aberrant, violent, self-denigrating behavior could not be holistic and it could not be whole health. It couldn't be in the right mind and be acting this way. So I think latent psychological trauma is probably being defined by our medical fraternity now, and it's becoming evident that there's a lot of people suffering and they need attention. Not just those who are on the street or those who are in the asylum, but generally professionals and just mass members of our society.
Well, you know, you mentioned, thank you, Jerome Sage. I'm seeing an article right in front of me, and again, excuse my ignorance, I'm not really privy to knowing which political or social perspective the Jamaican newspapers have, but I'm looking right here at a article from May 24, 2017 from the Jamaica Observer, saying to professionals that data suggests doubling of cases in 10 years of mental illness. And as someone in the field, I don't know where they can come across these projections, because, you know, I mean, it kind of like puts the island in a very deterministic mode, a very regular a mode in deterministic physics, which we know has been disproved. A deterministic model of the universe really doesn't exist. It's really we're talking about a quantum universe where there's a measurement of energy. How much more so human energy can be redirected in the snap of a finger, as I just did, you know, to a positive. And the question is too, is this a result? I mean, again, you'll have to explain to me and our listeners what the economic conditions are right now in Jamaica that perhaps they would spin out some sort of correlation. Like, for instance, when I took a course once on suicide, there was a correlation built in. The person making presentations, there can be correlations, but not necessarily causations. For instance, it says that more people drowned in the summer going swimming. And people also eat more ice cream, in the summer. So are we going to say because the same people on the beach eating ice cream, because they ate the ice cream, that's why they drowned in the lake or the ocean or the river? You know, it's a very distorted type of correlation. So I don't see what they're in this article here. It's not really pointing to causation. It's just like spinning out this idea, which is a little bit troubling to me, the drum stage.
Okay. The thing in Jamaica is that our major psychiatrists and those who are the most popular clinical psychologists have been really examining the dysfunction in the behavior. Now, first, there have to be some normative definition of what is the functionally acceptable, adjusted behavior for Jamaica, right? And
right.
I think that is steeped in some kind of moral attitude that comes out of a European ethic mixed with some kind of experiential evolution since maybe 1962 of a kind of a Jamaican slash, you know, coming into African retention, a kind of a broader sense of who we are. But mainly the normative behavior and where the pivot of normal functioning is still based on a European module, which I must remind you had issues in how they looked at Africans for the last 400 years. So one can suggest that using such a measure in itself would have been skewed anyway, meaning most of the behaviors they're talking about that is normative is those that are European, Eurocentric, right? As we've come to understand it in social thought process, right? So these Eurocentric behaviors are normative. Here comes a generation in the last 70 years who have evolved a kind of African retention and a new evolution to Rastafari and modern Jamaican pop culture. So the sense of what is normative now is more vast than what it was before. The Jamaicans wearing tattoos, right? That were considered demonic up until maybe the 1990s in Jamaica. That's how far our Christian fundamentalism has been imbued into the psychological behaviors and how people view who is a normal individual. So previously, 30 years ago, if you had tattoos with any kind of symbology that looks anti-Christian, well, you practically had a mental illness. You were somewhat crack or slightly, neurotic or something, right? Maybe not deep psychosis, but some form of neurosis, they would suggest, right? That being the case now, to understand this definition of a doubling of the cases of mental illness, I'm thinking that, number one, based upon that measure, there's a lot of people that is now falling outside of that normative behavior. So they now will be considered as being mentally ill because their physicalized behaviors now is not as the functional behaviors we were taught in our textbook. There's a different body language, you understand? There's a different modus of operandi in terms of our physicality, our emotionality, even how we appear. It is not just Rastafari dreadlock that was a shock in the 1930s and the 50s. It is evolved past that to individuals who have bleached the melanin out of their skin, who's bleaching, tattooing, doing body modifications and weird piercings that might seem to a Western eye as normative behaviors in your culture, but these were normative behaviors in our culture. And they tend towards a clinical definition of some form of mental disturbance because the adjustment of psychological behavior means that you're Christian and you wouldn't do those things because those things are evil. And that is all the premise. And this is how the behaviors manifest, and this is how you have acceptable behaviors in Jamaica. So I think there's something happening with how we are evolving as Jamaicans now, how we are evolving with the information we are getting from the internet and from various sources. There's more access beyond what the system or the structured formalities were affording us before. So now, it's more informal, it's more experiential, there are more pundits, there are more main features in the language. Now there's a patois lexicon, so there is a peculiarity that's happening that will also show up in behaviors as well. So there's some things happening, Brother Dan. I don't think it's all good, because it's also leading to some sort of disassociate behaviors, where previously in Jamaica, even through the same Christian modus operandi, we had a certain moral compass and a certain associate behavior where we connected with fellow Jamaicans. There's a disassociate behavior now, a disassociation which is natural now, because individuality has become more rampant. So in the mental scape, it is easier to hurt another Jamaican because we do not feel that there is any real connection, because individuality is on the rise. So it's not all good, but it's not all bad, because evolution moves us past our comfort zone, and we need mitigations, which I think we need better social programs that have well-adjusted individuals who are apt to be able to understand and design not just policy from governmental point of view, but also programs, you know, social programs and psychological programs. And my program that I do, Organic Arts Jamaica, is a program of therapy, right? There's a lot of psychological retraining and unlearning in my program. So I call it life transforming self-therapy, right? So It's really about the individual. I'm just there like a coach, like a life coach, just adding just a few important modicums of info. But I see that because of the kind of trauma we are going through as a people, just as Africans, Europeans, you know, Indians, Chinese, in our own locality, we are really at risk, and mass global trauma is on the rise, and we need programs now to mitigate and address these dysfunctions.
True. And it's something that the human family experience cannot be in denial of. I mean, I've seen reports that if we have 7 billion plus human beings living, breathing, conscious human beings, about 1/7 of them have some sort of disability, or as one of my mentors, Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock says, unique capabilities. That we're talking about 1 billion people across the world in various cultures and backgrounds and economic status are dealing with some sort of unique challenge that the rest of us call, quote-unquote, normal, whatever that's supposed to mean, don't deal with. Now, with that being said, I just want to bring out some facts about in North America in particular, a stat that kind of surprised me. I'm pulling from Mental Health America. Now, when I started out 14 years ago in the current division of social services that I'm engaged in, I remember hearing stats that 1 out of 8 people in America walking around with diagnosed or undiagnosed some form of mental illness. Then it went 1 in 7. Now it's 1 in 5. That's over, so you have about 300 million people living on this continent. That's basically about 60 million people. There's a problem of youth mental health worsening, with severe depression going up from 5.9% to 8.2%. I mean, there could be nothing worse, Jerome Sage, as a teenager walking around depressed, because this is supposed to be the flower of their youth. Even with severe depression, the stats in front of me show that 76% of the youth are left with no or insufficient treatment. So basically these stats are showing that 18% of adults have a mental health issue in America. Nearly half have a co-occurring substance abuse disorder. Over 10 million people experience the idea of taking their lives. So, you know, the one thing that the feature that stands out to me, they're not projecting how it will increase, because I don't know, for whatever reason in North America, the idea is to take away the stigma of the uniqueness of a person who might be besieged by foreign thoughts entering their mind or hearing voices. I mean, we've been trained, and I've been trained, that we do not deny a person saying, I hear a voice, or I see a person that say, you and I can't see. We basically ask the person experiencing that in their own mind, well, what are they telling you? And what do you want to do? Do you want to? And if obviously if the voice is telling them to hurt themselves, then we have to get a little more, you know, invasive, a little more, you know, questioning, and sometimes we have to take them for an evaluation, because in my field, once a person says they want to hurt themselves with a specific intent to cut their wrist, to jump off a building, I had to get someone hospitalized who said he was ready to jump off a building. So we had to take him in. I mean, because the thought process is cooking in such negativity, there has to be some sort of intervention. You know, and I also have to say that aside from what we mentioned at the beginning of the program, Dream Sage, is that there is the breakdown of the you can comment about that in Jamaica in a moment. I can just tell you that no matter what these social economic visionaries are projecting, that things are getting better in America, there are still too many families that the children don't sit down to supper with the parents. I mean, I'm someone who's a keeper of the Shabbat, the Sabbath. Basically, it's three times a week I eat with my children and wife. The Friday night meal, the Saturday afternoon meal, and hopefully we have a meal together on Sunday. But when I was growing up, I basically sat down at 6 o'clock every day with my father and mother and my brother. My father wasn't a super rich man, but he made a salary that my mother didn't have to work up until the age I was 15 as an engineer, because the cost of living, this is another factor that is part of the mental health wellness or illness problem. If the parents or the significant others, because we understand some people are raised in non-nuclear family situations, but healthy. I saw it. You know, my friends from Jamaica in living in Paterson, New Jersey, a little bit, 1984, 85, that how they were able to raise vigorously determined youth to want to succeed in their life endeavors, whatever they might be, whether it be in a nuclear family or non-nuclear family. And today it is very hard to keep that consistency of parental or uncle or aunt or grandparents or second cousin nurturing without that nurturing. That this is also, we are so fragile as human beings. We say in our prayer liturgy, we're like clay on the potter's wheel, and one moment we could be smashed, one moment we could be rebuilt. You're taking this, Drum Sage, on how the support system for just raising the youth are just much more brutal than they used to be, say, 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Okay, well, you know, a lot of this will fall into a lot of the modern clinical psychology, right? When man looks at the makeup of society, its structures, right? And all those structures psychologically translate to the demands upon the human psyche, right? You have so much dimension you have to split your attention into in the modern context, right? The more you progress economically, the more parents are distant from their children. The more the children are grown in private education, we can rename it distance education, because what happens is that the thrust towards economic success for a lot of parents pushes them working longer hours, makes them earn more money, having this disposable income. They can then send their children to so-called Ivy League or better schools. Still separated, disassociate behaviors on the rise. The modern structure have us compartmentalized in different dimensions. So here's the human psyche that really truly needs to remain as a whole, irregardless of the different functions it has to give credence to. It has to give credence to being a son. It has to give credence to being a father, a brother, a cousin, a friend, a familiar. All these psychological patterns it has to hold. It has to hold the premise of being successful, of being a caring father, a responsible friend, a good husband, all these potentials, right? And you have to fulfill these things without a close-knit support system. Your parents are far off. Relationships are pulled apart because of economics. Your wife, your fiance, she's 5,000 miles away because you need to pay for the house that you are living in the gated communities. The kids are in private education 25 miles away. The family is so divided. The individual psyche is as equally divided as the distance between where you are living. The mind is as much an out-picturing as it is an in-picturing. So within your psyche is without. So all these disassociate behaviors is leading to the mental diagnosis that people are developing more and more mental illness because we're further and further apart. And how we've been, let's look at it in the terms of evolution. Because how do we come to any kind of empirical or any kind of surety as to what is fundamental? As you say, we are quantum, we are moving. Why is it important? It is important because our thoughts have been anchored here for thousands of years. We have evolved views and versions of ourselves, right? Our versions thereof take us away from the whole essence of what we are about. We are made up of our past. The DNA of our parents are in us. And that means part of us functions as they do. And that means that part of their dysfunction will be within us, but also part of their drive towards a harmonious existence is within us. And that is where we get to the premise of sanity, that it is the approval, it is truly the acceptance of the peer, of the peers, of the environmental, of the multiplicity of social groups. This is what harmonizes behavior to be well-adjusted. We need more caring activities, more genuine actions towards each other, not just for material gain, but for a sense of well-being. Because not only are people who are poor and disenfranchised tending on to suicide, but those who are also wealthy and well-to-do are also tending on to suicide. So the statistics are showing a rise in both. So it's not just in one side. And that shows that it's a general disconnect. Our associate behaviors teach us that we need each other. Not just when we're in moments of need. It's not just a good Samaritan story of the Bible. It is actuality. Christ was asked, are we our brother's keeper? And the answer was squarely yes. So it is a constant experience. It's not just when we're in need. We ought to care, and caring is what makes we feel accepted beyond color, class, creed. And towards that, my brother, I respect your work in New York and what you're doing right at home, helping, you know, your fellow New Yorkers, and also just helping the people through your radio programs. And Asami, for doing this work, because as I said in my first, in my personal program on my channel on mental health, growing up, I have been so hurt when I see the derangement in people going by. It just hurt me. And I would talk to my mother about it, and she always said, Jerome, don't worry about it because you do not know what is the cause. But beyond causation, Dan, I was just afflicted by the activity of seeing them like that. It doesn't matter what causes it. It's just not nice because it affects the rest of us. And I cannot understand how others can feel at peace seeing others living like this. It affects my sense of well-being. That's a part of me, right? And so we need to get back to associate behaviors where we know that we are part of each other and get out of our crazy disassociations and separatism towards success and materialism. And I thank you for your work. I mean, for other people who are equally doing their work, both in the religious and the non-religious sphere, towards human harmony, you know, harmonious living.
Well, John, I would say that perhaps I would humbly suggest, without seeing you face to face, you know, hand in hand, that you will have a healthy dose of healthy connection to your divine image, because the divine image so too should compel a person to realize what's wrong with this picture that they're, I mean, here in New York City, the Great Apple, the metropolis of the world, there are 50,000 people homeless living on the street. I mean, you know, okay, so you say 10 million people have stable housing, but for that 50,000, you know, and they all have their fascinating stories. And people have done, you know, like interviews with them. They've made videos of them. Every one of them has a story, but and it's fascinating. But the point is, they are suffering. In fact, I once went to a conference, Drum Sage, in New York City, before there was the quote unquote, they call like the economic collapse of 2008. When there seemed to be more money flowing through social services, some of it's trickling down a little bit more, but back then there was a question raised at the symposium I attended, is in fact housing a human right? Now, I believe it is. You know, so someone said, well, who's going to pay for it? Well, there is, you know, again, I think I sent you a video about this, that something like $800 trillion a year, $800 billion a year is spent on world military forces, whatever they may be, this side or that side. And if they were only to take something like 5%, 4%, whatever, you know, you're talking about, you know, $40 billion. What $40 billion could do to be spread around the world like butter on toast to replenish water systems, because sometimes mental illness or physical disability is incurred, Hashem have mercy, because the water is poisonous. Like we had, I don't know if you're aware of, in Flint, Michigan, there was this plague.
I've become aware of it, yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely, I mean, and very few people are being held accountable. I mean, that's like a crime against humanity. You know, here in the United States, that people just can't get access to drinkable water, where I remember hearing a Lakota native by the name of Teokasin Goster saying he remembers 50-plus years ago, you can basically go to most brooks in America, cup your hands, and drink the water. Today, one would be putting oneself in danger. But Drumsage, talk about someone, say, who is not at the – he's not in the – so to speak, whether they've been imprisoned by forces outside their control, or maybe they did actions that led to a destabilization, or as we call it, decompensation. Let's say to reach out to those people who are feeling a little bit weak. So I know I'm going to offer a word of encouragement from the descendant of King David and Solomon. I'm sure you can amplify it. Maybe in King Solasi or someone else you want to bring in. The whole idea is this. Regardless of where we are in life, we have to have faith in something. Now, I would promote the idea of faith in the Creator. But it's not just faith that just remains in one's thoughts. It should permeate the whole of one's life.
Yes.
So those of us who are believers, at the very point, we believe that the Creator, the Most High, is directing the world. And Creator is capable of directing 7 billion plus people. And then if we understand with that faith, we shall see. We shall see it with our fleshly eyes, a prophetic teaching from Isaiah. In 46:4, I have made you, and I will carry you. I will sustain and deliver you. So the this is calling from a teaching again from Rebbe. So he asked the question, is God really in need of your worry as to how he's going to run your affairs and solve your problems? Or will he succeed in finding good solutions even without your worrying? So this is what we want to try to promote, and I know you're very successful doing this, is promoting a positive mindset to keep a person from crossing the border over into a type of decompensation which could lead to long-term negative ramifications.
Yes, the truth is we need to make others feel like they are wanted, they are needed, because a lot of time the disassociate behavior comes from the fact of us ourselves going through this disassociation and then feeling that it's a part of our moral duty then, as a part of our evolutionary trait, to pass on a necessary experience, you know, for a human to process for themselves. So sometimes what we do is we pass on the debauchery, the bitterness of perception to next generation and to others amongst our living space. But the truth is we should be trying to be more supportive, to be more understanding when we see a human begin, a friend, a familiar, begin to move outside of the realms of what is their normal functional attitudes and behaviors, right? Because there are things that messes up the subtleties of what holds us together. As you say, we are such a fickle and gentle soul that for those of us who have a faith in a divine, we have a go-to, right, that assures us of our eternal acceptance and the eternal love that is there for us, not just in theory, but in actuality. that there is sun, there is air, there is clean water, and there is always a helping hand. So for those of us who are imbued with a more clearer, willing understanding, knowing of our Creator, let us engender that principle, not necessarily for religiosity, but for genuine help, because these individuals need a listening ear. They need a shoulder to cry on, to lean on. They need someone to help them narrow the focus from the broad country. Sometimes they need someone to widen the focus from the narrow country to see the open expanse of possibilities. Economics, social pitfalls, emotional failings, you know, all these little inadequacies, which again are all psychological, but have their manifest behaviors, you know, into their psychosis and the neurosis when it gets out of control. These all start out as some kind of dysfunction, right? They start out as some kind of, you know, sometimes environmental dysfunction. Sometimes it starts out because maybe a child is the second child in a relationship that had a previous child from a different father or a different mother. And the sense that you are not a child for both your parents, you know, you're not mama and papa's child. You're just mama's child, or you're just papa's child. And that disassociation, so then you are being psychologically groomed by someone, i.e. a stepfather, a stepmother, that is not genetically associated with your genealogy. You understand me? So that has to go back to your ancestry. That goes back to the socialization in which the family and our family is grown and our family is brought together. So now you are grown up by a different parent, a stepfather, stepmother that has different belief systems, that have different morals, right? That have different activities they want to inculcate and perpetuate. You are then forced, because your genetics, what is natural to your genes, wants you to go a certain way. You're socialized a Rastaman, but really and truly your parents are Christians, right? But your mother broke up with your father. Now she's with a Rastaman. He's smoking herb. He's living a certain way. But your genetics, the social fabric which made you, is Christian, right? And your spirit is now rebelling, and vice versa, right? Your father is a Rastaman. Your mother breaks up with your father. Now your stepfather is a Christian. He wants to impose Christian morals and Christian principles on you. But the fact is, your genetics, your behavioral structure is made up of your father's genes, right? And that genetical structure suggests a certain kind of behavior that is normative, that is acceptable, right? Now, all these disassociations, because of our family structures are made up, needs to be mitigated. We need a view that is beyond just these limited perceptions, right? That can afford us the understanding to know and say, it doesn't matter, right? If your parents separate and you've been socialized by, you know, a stepfather, a stepmother that is totally beyond what is, you know, natural to you. So that kid is rebelling. That kid is going out late. That kid is is smoking marijuana. That kid is drinking. That kid is acting up. That kid is showing a negative behavior because the environment doesn't fit with the soul. It doesn't fit with what is natural. But I'm here to suggest to that individual, do not. The spear groupings are as aligned as thoughts are. Find yourself. Be accepting of who you are and the conditions that you're facing, because there's always those out there who understand. There's always those out there who have been through similar situations on the good end, the worst end, and everything in between. So you got to trust. So if I am speaking directly now, you know, if I have the privilege to such an individual, beyond all the fluff of argument and the fanciness of language, I'm saying to you, I'm telling you as a matter of fact, don't despair. Because the fact is, there's always someone there. There's more than just a brother Don on the radio and a brother Jerome on the radio. You understand me?
That's
there's
right.
always someone in your family, in your community, across your block, you understand me, across the hallway from you, in the next cubicle from you. There's always someone who has that awakened perception, that knowledge of care, of knowing that we belong to each other, of knowing that we should take care of each other naturally. And trust that that person, our person, will get to you in the right moment when you need it.
I like to share with you something that's like segue. Hopefully it's a nice segue from what you just said, Drum Sage. I learned this just a couple of days ago. It was a wonderful teaching. Everyone's familiar with the story of Joseph the Righteous One with his father, Jacob, who was considered one of the three patriarchs of Israel. And so the question is arises, why did Jacob give additional love to his son? Well, he had 11 other sons, 12 tribes of Israel, right? So the responses from one of our sages is that Jacob was a prophet. And he saw that Joseph would be tested in ways his brothers would not be tested. So he had to give him that additional love because with his prophetic spirit he saw that that love would carry Joseph through the various tests that he would go through life and the things that he would suffer with. He was put in jail. He was thrown into a pit by his brothers. He was sold several times between the Midianites and the Ishmaelites and then to the Egyptians.
Yes. He was rejected.
You know, and even... I'm sorry?
He was
rejected. But the thing is that when he came to be tempted by the wife, her name was Potiphera, that we have from our old Torah tradition, that he saw the image of his father, because, you know, Joseph also had prophetic spirit in him, that which would be later actualized when he interpreted the dreams of Pharaoh, that love... invested in the son, who the father as a prophet could see, would have to go through tests the other 11 brothers wouldn't have, because they were basically shepherds, while he would eventually be the viceroy to Pharaoh, is an instruction to us, investing that love, that extra bit of love in another human being. You don't have to be a prophet to know this. We've already been shown in this instruction, if you invest a little bit more love in a human being, you never know what type of test they'll be able to conquer or to overcome because of that extra love you gave to them.
True. That is something that I think mothers are very much aware of in Jamaica. Because they're very much aware of our society in terms of the caregiving and the social, psychological training of children, very maternal. The mothers always tend to have to know how to love each child differently. You have to have the tough love for those who is stubborn and most determined in their behavior. And you have to be able to love those very supportively who are timid and unsure in their behaviors. You have to learn to love those with a great tolerance who are a little bit, what we would say, you know, deviant in their behavior, a little miscreant in their behavior, a little out of sorts in their behavior. And such a love really has to start with parents, and then it, in terms of romantic love, to find the mate, you know, that will understand you unconditionally beyond just behaviors that might not seem normative, that they understand the core essence, that their love is so broad, it encompasses you, so you would not fail or fall out of a place of care to then become so detached, depressed, and uninterested, rather. So that is very interesting, because part of psychological health is your interest in things, is your desire. So when you're uninterested in things, that is brought on through depression. It's a sign that you're not whole either. You're unhealthy, because a healthy, well-adjusted being has deep interest, has multiplicity of interest, from the mundane to the most deep and intricate. So to keep interest in life towards participation, brothers and sisters, get out, get some sun. When it's sunny, get some serotonin in the body going out. Get some endorphins active from the brain. And if it ain't sunny, go gym, go walking, do your treadmill. Get some exercise where the body can use its bioelectric spark, you know, that interest. Circulate. You know, circulation is part of mental health too, right? Because then we know that there's the environmental triggers, but there's also the biological triggers, right? And sometimes you're not properly nourished, right? And your body cannot process, you know, the necessary chemicals for the beta nutrients, you know, or the micronutrients you need. So it encompasses eating well, sleeping well, thinking, having a wholesome, healthy life from a child into a young adult, into an adult, into middle age, into old age. And it's a constant process. You say quantum, I say we grow, we evolve, and this evolution means that we have to adapt and be able to unlearn and then relearn, and then be able to train others in what we have unlearned and what we are relearning.
True. You mentioned something about lack of nutrition, Jerome Sage. On the other side of the spectrum, I don't know, maybe you hopefully will comment this, but in America, there is also another plague, which is not connected, but indirectly connected to problems with mental health, i.e. mental illness, as they say, clinical depression, other mental disorders, the consequences of obesity. And again, I'm pulling from this, from Center for Disease Control and Prevention, that there are wholehearted, hardcore clinical studies about long-range analysis of people when they become overweight and obese and depression. And the there is a association between obesity and depression, and obesity and psychopathology in women. There was a study that was done over three decades ago. Now, I remember as a youth man, when I was in my teenage years, a quote-unquote obese person, say a person who was like 5'7", 5'10", 250, 200 pounds, they stuck out like a sore thumb, like the proverbial bull in the China store, in the glassware store. Today, I mean, you can literally count 50%, if not more, people walking around carrying excess. In Jamaica, I just don't picture, for some reason, because I guess I'm romanticizing that people are eating healthier. But do you have an obesity issue in Jamaica?
Well, the obesity issue is more concerned with opulence, and not because of the poverty of behavior, the lack of emotional support. Because I know a lot of times, part of dissociative behaviors in America suggests that people eat for a kind of emotional sustenance, not just a biological sustenance, but a sense of almost like an addiction, right? A food addiction
a
psychological result, not just a biological result. That so leads to overeating. Now, we do not necessarily have so much overeating disorders, and if they are here, they are more regulated and, I should say, isolated rather. Nice or regulated, that's a good word. They're rather isolated in opulent and more, well-off social groupings, because, you know, it's associated with means, you know. Because the majority of, I would say, working class or the so-called poor Jamaican, average Jamaican, is not really overweight. Their mental illness comes from psychological things that develop from a lot of the lack of acceptance they feel, because economic prowess is very important. So a lot of your sense of well-being has to do with your ability to get a good job and to be able to marry a good woman as a man and to be able to get a good woman as a man. That ability, right, is very wrapped up within our mental health in Jamaica. So you have a lot of young people or just people who are working class who are barely making enough money. And as a result of barely making enough money, they cannot have the living conditions and circumstances they need. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, they are very much out of alignment, because it leads to a lot of depressive thoughts and suicidal and sometimes even violent thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, here in New York City, I'm sorry?
No, that's my mother just calling it. What's she calling on my side? It's not about that.
Okay. No problem. Give my regards to your mother.
Mommy love.
Give my regards to your mother.
I
can tell you this, like, say in a certain part, one part of New York City called the Bronx, you've probably heard of it, you have working class people who do not get access to fresh food. And what they do is they have these fast food fried chicken places. They have what are known as bodega stores, like corner markets, where basically the cheapest food is the most self-injurious food. You know, the fried pork rinds, the potato chips, the worst possible. When these people but there is an effort, I'm happy to say, that local farming markets are trying to get more and more into the lifestyles of these individuals. And you also have a courageous organization called Food Harvest, and
yes.
I'm not saying the right name. City. I think it's called City Harvest. They deliver food that's used at maybe like conventions or restaurants, But, you know, much better food, and they give courses in public on how to grow, you know, fruits and vegetables, that which can be grown within the house, like, say, like tomatoes. So there is this effort, but without a proper food supply as well, we shouldn't be surprised when the mental wellness of people are undermined.
Yes, yes. Because the other toxicity in the food leads to toxic behaviors as well, too. You know what I mean? Imhotep said many generations ago, you know, we are what we eat. Let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. You understand me? So now all these things, it is what we truly consume that really fuels the experience we call existence, right? So the premise of putting toxic junk into your body will create toxic environment and toxic manifestations, right? That being said, it's not just a statement, it's an intellectual. It suggests to individuals that exercise, along with fresh produce, juices, will actually help to harmonize not just your biological health, but also your psychological health as well, too. It's in tandem. It goes hand in hand, right? It actually goes hand in hand.
Yes. So I'm saying, believe it or not, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're just landing on the beach, so
okay.
This is good.
Okay, so anyway, believe it or not, we've come to the conclusion of today's program. So can you please tell our Blessed Soul listeners how can they connect with you via Selim Media or any other form that would be mutually beneficial to you and those who want to connect with you?
Well, they can reach me at Jerome Sage Butler on YouTube. On Facebook, Jerome Sage Butler. And on Instagram, they can also find me at Sela Media, that is S-E-A-L-A, and this is on YouTube. And you can Facebook. My local contact number that I use for our clients and consultation is 1-76-790-4371, and that is 1-76-790-4371. And that is for our consultations and people who want healing and psychic treatment.
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, Blessed Souls, we're going to end off. It was a fast-paced program. I didn't expect it would move so quickly, but I guess when the dialogue is relevant, that time does fly. We're going to end off by wishing everyone a wonderful day. And, of course, Jerome Sage's uncle is having a birthday today, so everyone have some good thoughts towards Clarendon, Jamaica, and the rest of that part of the diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica. Yes. Yes. And with that being said, we're going to sign off with a song called Joel's Niggin, which really means Joel's song. And with that being said, I would like to thank everyone for listening in the 37 states in America and the 37 regions around the world, from here in the West to all the way deep into South Korea and Africa and the Middle East. We're even penetrating into Ukraine for the last several months. So that being said, let's end off with a Havachad, one love, Gorlachad, one destiny, Kolon of all, but Darchin Om Darchin Shalom, in a pleasant and peaceful way. La Hamshik Vez Hashem Yisbrek, to continue with the blessings of the Most High. Remember, everyone, I have to be good, Rom Sej has to be good, we have to be good, because it's Teba Tov Lehetiv, it's the nature of the good, to do good. The Creator is the source of our goodness. Let's go do some goodness today to show that we as microcosmic, one out of 7 billion plus human beings on this earth, can make this earth truly sustainable, because that's all we are, the stewards of the earth. May we accomplish it speedily in our days. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, love. Hello.